Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello Broncos fans and welcome to a special episode of Broncos Weekly. As always, I'm Mitch and I'm joined on the line by our new friend, Channel 7's own Chris Garry. How you doing, Chris?
Good, mate. How are you, Mitch?
Mate, I'm coping. That's what I am after Saturday. I'm coping. It's not an existence, but I'm here. Mate, anyway, everyone, we've got Chris from Channel 7, as you've probably heard of him. Very prominent Broncos reporter to jump on the podcast this week. He is aware of what we do most weeks, so I won't surprise him with my demeanor today. But anyway, Chris, thanks for coming on, and I hope you're looking forward to joining not just myself, but the more hardcore Broncos fans who listen to this podcast.
Oh, absolutely, mate. I get some very interesting messages on Twitter, so I feel like this is going to be an audio version of that. but that's all good, you know. Like, that's the whole point, isn't it? Like, as I say to some of the Broncos when they get the shits with me, like, I am here to be a conduit as such for the fans. Like, a lot of what I do is meant to be, I do try and think with what do the fans want to know, so.
Yeah, exactly, mate. Anyway, before we get started, I thought I'd just get people more familiar with yourself, and I want to address one thing that I don't think anyone believes, but apparently you're a New Zealand Warriors fan.
I sure am, mate. And since 95, so I was in New Zealand until I was about 5 or so, in a little town called Tamarindui, which is in King's Country, south of Hamilton, near Mount Ruapehu, I'm forgetting where I'm from. So am I allowed to swear on this or not?
Yes. Well, yes, you are.
Okay. So I'll try not to. But, yeah, so, yeah, I'm from New Zealand. I moved over here when I was about 5 or 6. I sort of forget, been trying to forget. But, yeah, in 95, I went back over for the summer, just before 95. So the summer of 95, when the Warriors were about to launch in Super League, et cetera, and all that was coming through. And a family member, like, I had no idea about rugby league, but a family member for Christmas, like, I didn't know any of my family over there, and he just gave me a Warriors jersey. So an actual 95, like, Warriors jersey, which I've somehow managed to lose. But ever since then, mate, loved them. Phil Blake, Sean Hoppy, Ali Lauatiti, all those guys. I grew up loving the Warriors, watching every game. Like, Sean Hoppy was the first player I really, really followed. And, you know, and then those early Stacey Jones, obviously, those early 2000 Warriors teams. And the funny thing is, it's like, to people over here, it's like, oh, really? You follow the Warriors? But whenever I go back home, like, all we do is talk about the Warriors. Like, people don't understand that in Auckland, not so much this year or last year, but in Auckland, rugby league's a big deal. Like, outside of Auckland, not so much, especially the South Island. But in Auckland, it's a huge deal. Like, the Warriors are massive. When they're winning, they're bigger than the Auckland Blues. Obviously, the All Blacks are on another tier, but in terms of week to week, NRL is massive over there. So it's got a huge following, and I get doing the job I do means that the Warriors and following league as a fan isn't really a thing I do as much anymore, but I still try and sit down on the couch and watch as much Warriors games as I can, because when the Warriors are thriving, rugby league's thriving, you know, it's that old saying about Parramatta, but there's nothing better when the Warriors are going. Like, those early 2000s teams with Stacey, and that was incredible. Same with Sean Johnson, and like in 2011, like, I still can't believe how they did Sean Johnson so wrong. It was disgraceful what they did to him. Like, people won't understand just how big of a deal he was in New Zealand sport.
Yeah, mate, he's, how can I compare him to an Aussie? I don't know if I can compare him to an Aussie, because he's such a standout in rugby league in New Zealand, Sean. And I think that was the biggest part of his departure that stuck with me as well. It's like, I know a lot of fans from over here would say, oh, he underperformed, you know, whatever, fuck him, get rid of him. It's like, no, that guy was, he like was the Warriors, and he grew up wanting to be a Warriors player, and there's so much media we don't consume in Australia that he's featured in over there. So it was always bizarre how that breakup happened, hey?
Yeah, it was really poor. And like I was in New Zealand about 6 months before for a wedding, and you go to the outside on the barbershops, they would have advertised Sean Johnson haircuts, such and such price. Like that's how much of a big deal. It sort of reminds me of what like Quade Cooper was like when the Reds, like around 2010, 2011.
Yeah.
For people not in Queensland, like around that time, Quade Cooper, the Broncos were going like busteds. Darren Lockyer had just retired in 2011. And around that time, Quade Cooper was the biggest Queensland sports star. I had a lot to do with him at the time, and I made that so specifically, A, because I like the guy, B, because he's entertaining, but, mate, people just gravitated towards him, you know? And it was like that in New Zealand with Sean Johnson. He was arguably, for a while there, the biggest sports star, especially in the North Island. Again, the South Island's a whole different world, but in the North Island, he was huge.
Yeah, he was. And he ended up, covering the Broncos. How many years now? I know you've, obviously, it's seven now and at Courier Mail prior, but how long have you pretty much been, you know, Broncos or Brisbane sports focused?
So I joined the Courier. I started work out at Queensland Times out of Ipswich, a daily paper out there in 20. Or I sort of started doing it when I was in uni, but basically halfway through 2009. And I got to cover Glenn Lazarus's one and only season as Ipswich Jets coach. And I wrote a series of articles that got him sacked because he was a disaster. He was an absolute disaster. And an absolute asshole to me. So, but understandable too, because I wasn't writing nice things about him. But so anyway, that got a bit of attention for me from the Courier Mail, and job came up, and next thing you know. But I mean, then I sort of did a bit of everything for about a year at the Courier, and yeah. So I'd say probably since like late 2012, that the infamous game of Darren Lockyer when Gerard Beale broke his orbital bone, I think it was, wasn't he? Remember when he couldn't fly to Manly? They had that game against Manly. That was
terrible
really,
game.
Yeah, great memories for Broncos fans. So that was, I have to give a shout out to Paul Malone, who was the sport editor of the Courier Mail. Like, I'd only really covered a couple of league games for the Courier Mail. Not obviously great guys like Peter Bedell and Steve Ricketts were there, Paul Malone as well, Robert Crash Craddock, amazing reporters that were all there. And for whatever reason, after that game, right, that was a Saturday night. And on the Sunday, I was the only league reporter on, and Paul Malone was the sport editor. And unfortunately, Paul's going through a rough time with it at the moment. He's quite sick, so shout out to him. But he just said to me, mate, you're the only league reporter on today, and we've got to follow this story up. So here's Darren Lockyer's number. He's in hospital. Call him.
Jesus.
And, mate, I spoke to Lockyer on his hospital bed about it all. And I wrote seven stories the next day, the front page, the back page, a couple in the middle. Yeah, it was something ridiculous. And, ever since then, mate, I fell in love with covering the Broncos. I don't support them at all, despite what some people think. I get a lot of crap on Twitter about that. People going, oh, of course you do. You know, you're a Broncos supporter. It's like, what am I supposed to talk about? I'm a Brisbane sport reporter. Like, this is, what am I going to talk about South Sydney every day? Like, you know, it's just.
That's it, mate.
It's frustrating.
And then where the attention is, mate, is, you know, Broncos are people in other states can deny, but they are the team that receives, you know, 10 times the attention of any other club in this league. So, of course, you cover the Broncos if you're in Brisbane.
Yeah, absolutely. Unfortunately, the Titans, like, I know I really like the guys down there, mate. You write a Titans story, you do a Titans story, and no one really cares, which is unfortunate. Yeah. I really hope it changes. It will, but it's a bit like, you know, even when the GWS Giants and the Sydney are going well. You do a GWS Giants if your story if you're in Sydney and no one really cares.
Well, mate, none of us Broncos fans took the Titans threat of David Fifita seriously. And we'll get to that in a moment, but that's it. No one takes that club seriously, and I know this might change shortly for them, but yeah, they don't really garner much attention. I want to ask you one more thing before we actually start talking about that, and I'm going to get you talking on Twitter again. I'm going to get you to defend one of your takes, and you said I could ask this before the podcast. I'm going to back to 10:03 p.m. March 22, 2019, tweet from Chris Gary 7. He said, who would you pay more for right now, Pangai Jr. or Taumalolo? Me, Pangai Jr. Has the ball-playing potential, Taumalolo doesn't, and similar running game. Now, you've copped flack for this since the day you tweeted it?
Oh, and can I just point out, never deleted it.
Yeah. Ballsy move, Matt. I actually did search for it before the podcast, and I did spell something wrong, and I couldn't find it. And I thought, he has not deleted that, has he?
Like, no, and I never would, because clearly I was a little bit overexcited about what was arguably, can you think of a better individual performance since then? I can't. Like, that was incredible. Really?
Well, you're speaking to like another Pangai sympathizer. I'm not here to shame you for this take. You know, I was on that board, mate. Like that. If you guys forget, this is that game we're talking about, round two last year, where the Broncos won 29-10 over the Cowboys, but Pangai just smashed Tamalolo off the park. And Tamalolo played what 34 minutes or so, but the Pangai was all over him, and it was one of those Pangai games. And I know for us Broncos fans, it feels like it's been a while since one of those games, but they did happen.
Oh, they did, and they will happen again. Here's my thing. The ceiling of Pangai is higher than the ceiling of Taumalolo. I still maintain that, even today. Pangai has not delivered as I expected him to in terms of consistency. He's been injured. He's just... Sometimes I'm like, what's going on, mate? Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. He's and it does help that he's a really good guy. Obviously, I get on well with him. But his ceiling is higher than Taumalolo's. Would I say the same thing? Would I still pay more? Probably not now that I've seen more, but I still believe in Pangai, you know? And the other thing is, hey, 3 years in a row, the Cowboys aren't going to make the finals. Broncos aren't making the finals this year either, but they did last year. So I still think that Pangai can be the best forward in the competition. So that's my new take. I'm not sure if I'd pay more than Taumalolo for him. But guess what? Taumalolo's contract runs out in 2027.
It's a long time, mate.
And let's be honest, he hasn't been the same this year. He's been pretty average this year by his standards. Still a good forward. By his standards, he's been serious. He's dropped down. So he's still a very good player. And I'd just like to say, one thing that always sticks in my mind is like one Cowboys official when they were doing the deal said to me, oh, what do you think? 10 years, 2027. And I said, oh, geez, I don't know, mate. That last 3 years of that, I think is going to really hurt you. And the Cowboys person, who I obviously won't name, said, yeah, but, you know, what does it matter? I won't be here by then.
That's my kind of guy.
Yeah, so I don't know. Like, I just hope Pangai...
Global warming, mate. Tamalolo warming up there. It's not my problem once I'm gone.
Yeah. I just hope Pangai just shows, you know, for Broncos fans especially, and people like yourself and me even, who really believe in him, can show us some consistency, which I do think he can. And he does really rate Seibold too. That's the other interesting thing. He's been a really big public supporter of Seibold.
Yeah, I think Pangai, the ceiling thing, I'll let you get away with it, but I think the problem with Pangai is his floor is about 15 times lower than Taumalolo's, and that's with the bit of when he sees red and does something a bit stupid and misses a couple of weeks. Taumalolo hasn't got that in his game, and I think that's the big thing holding Pangai back. And you got mocked for that take, but you were not the only person thinking Tevita Pangai was $1 million player last year. Many thought the same.
Oh, yeah, and I won't delete it either. And I've had some other bad takes, and I'll continue to have bad takes, but...
That's the take game, mate. You've got to have bad takes. You've got to put the good and bad out there. You've got to be taking takes.
You got to have an opinion, right? Otherwise, it's like Stephen A., you know, in America, it's like people always mock him, but what do you want him to do? Just sit in front of the TV and just say things that aren't interesting?
Yeah, but the funny thing is, though, Chris, mate, no one's ever going to remind you when you were right. That's just how it works. You might have 100 takes that they were right, and no one's coming back. Chris, mate, remember that really good take you had 4 years ago? No one's ever said that to anybody.
And if I retweet one of my good takes, you just look like a tosser. So
that's it. Actually, let's do one more of your Twitter takes before we move on. This one, actually a bit of Broncos chat, and this one I think carries a bit of weight, but you did say last preseason on there, and you've caught some stick for this one as well, but they looked like they were training better than they were prior. And you want to delve into that one for me about the Broncos? Was it 110% or something they were training at? I can't remember exactly.
Yeah, so one of Seibold's things was that he had them training at higher tempos and rates than actual games. So we'd use sort of GPS data, et cetera, and have them training at have their training at higher rates of that GPS data. So that's where the 110%, et cetera, came from. They absolutely were training better than they were under Wayne Bennett. You know, let's not forget Wayne Bennett ended his tenure as well at the club with an awful loss to the Dragons in week one of the finals. Things weren't great under Bennett. Like, Bennett's last couple of years at the Broncos has been mythologized into something it just wasn't. Bennett is still, to me, the greatest coach in the history of rugby league. And just like Andrew McCulloch had shown until his awful injury, sometimes people need a new club. sometimes people need to freshen up. And I think Wayne Bennett absolutely needed to freshen up. And I absolutely believe that it was the right call to move him on. I thought they could have handled it better. But they, to get back to the original tweet, they were absolutely training better. This year, I'm not so sure if they are. Sometimes I think they do. Other times it looks sloppy. I'm also, as Anthony Seibold's admitted, they have not adapted well to six again. They clearly weren't training the way that a six again rule should have them training. But the players get flogged. Like on that Saturday morning, right? I was talking to you off air earlier about how I went there to cover Fifita and get some shots of him. There were players throwing up on the ground. That's how hard they were being worked, and that's the recovery session.
Yeah. I mean, so, come on. I'm not a sports scientist, but it doesn't sound great in the, you know, round 11 recovery session. Doesn't sound fantastic to me.
Yeah, it may be, but there's no doubt to me that they're working harder than they were under Bennett. I mean, Benji Marshall famously said he got great at golf under Wayne Bennett up here.
And he did knock Milford's training ethic up there under Wayne Bennett, also famously.
Yeah, he did. Look, the thing is, I think Wayne, especially in his last year here, tried to, I guess, cull the players too much, let them get away with a bit too much, because he sensed that time was coming up. You need player support. I don't know. I haven't asked Wayne that specific question, but I do wonder whether trying to protect himself and pump up the players and get their support led to him being a bit, I don't know, easy on them, because they didn't play well that year. They were poor.
They were. They had a couple of good wins the back couple of rounds. They beat South and the Roosters and that big win against Manly leading into the finals. But there was times that year, I remember, did we lose to the Titans that year? We did lose to the Titans. Lost to the Titans and Newcastle in back-to-back weeks in rounds 4 and 5. And that's when I first started to question, like, what's, you know, am I also losing faith in Wayne? And I never lost that faith. And you speak earlier about that mythology of Wayne Bennett. I certainly perpetuate that. But I think I can bite the bullet that you said that, you know, it probably was time or closer time for him to move on. But I certainly agree that it may have been the time, but the method was wrong. And as we all know from here, any Broncos fan would probably most likely agree that what they've done since almost everything has been wrong in their opinions.
Yeah. And look, I won't go that far. I think they've done some right things. Up until recently, they'd re-signed all the players they wanted to re-sign. Fifita's the first one to really say that's actually, they've tried and hasn't worked out. Andrew McCulloch, they were happy to let go. Josh Maguire, they were happy to let go and things like that. So, and I mean, the Josh Maguire one, there's so many myths. Like, and you know, us in the media are very responsible for this. The amount of time that we have to fill the air with means that we just throw up some stuff that we don't really think about. You know, so Josh Maguire's one, like he had a great deal at the Cowboys and he came to the Broncos and said, can you match it? Because this is a longer term deal. Matt Gillette had just gotten an extension and he wanted a similar extension. The Cowboys had a great deal there and the Bronx didn't want to match it. And they said, no, you can take it up. Now you can argue they shouldn't have and kept him around. But do you really want an unhappy Josh Maguire around Red Hill? I don't think you do. So.
Yeah, I actually agree that I think a lot of the players that let go was the right decisions. I just don't think the decisions afterwards were the correct ones. Like, I've thought for a couple of years now that we're screaming out for a senior forward just for a couple of years, and we don't really have any of those right now. And I thought, you know, I'm happy with Moose to go, but I would love to have seen someone senior come in, you know, just to tie over the club and lead the pack for a couple of years. And, you know, whilst there's oodles of talent in that pack, I still feel like they lack a leader outside of Pangai and Lodge. But Pangon Lodge aren't on the field every week.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Yeah, they need more players between the ages of 25 and 30.
They do.
I don't have it on hand. I probably should. But, you know, it's a very low number. I think Anthony Milford's one of them. So
he's one of the... Yeah, and what people think about Milford will... Yeah, they don't think he's a senior player. That's for damn sure.
No, they don't. And I don't think... Like, Milford's not in the leadership group this year. And I think that's because he doesn't want to be in the leadership group. He's not that sort of guy. He's a pretty quiet character, you know. And one of the issues is that there's a lot of quiet characters in this side. Payne Haas is their best player week in, week out, but he's a shy, quiet character, unless Chris Walker is talking crap at one of his mates.
You know? Bad fingers, mate. That's it. Well, yeah, you mentioned that the players over the age of 26 or 26 and over, that's Milford, Glenn, Boyd, Luke and Teo. And as we all know, Luke and Teo only just turned up. So it was a very young squad and and not a lot of younger guys as well. Like, I wouldn't say, and you can correct me here if I'm wrong, but I don't think Joe Ofangawe, for example, reeks leadership either, and he's one of the older bunch at the club.
No, and he's more of an outgoing character. But again, I don't think he wants to be a leader or seen as a leader. And he's a really guy who really trains hard. Great fella. But there's not a lot of blokes there. Like, I was seeing it on the weekend as I watched Nathan Brown rip into Sean Bloor. Why? How could the Broncos need that? How good would it be if Nathan Brown was a Bronco? You know,
like, it's one of those ones, though, mate. It's like, we got to. He's a Bronco. Then do they actually bite the bullet on someone like Carrigan?
Yeah, well, again, Carrigan is one. He's a future captain for real. Like, he's legit. Like, he's a really strong leader. I still think they, having lost Fafita, I just wonder, should they have kept Lodge and Flegler? I wonder if they needed to make a decision on one of those two, and get a more experienced player, because Lodge is older, but he's still inexperienced. So, yeah, that, how good would it be if they had a Takiaho, even like,
oh, yeah,
you know, like someone like that, who's not a super expensive forward, but he's experienced and he's mobile, or Nathan Brown, or someone like even a Hargraves, or actually a Herman Asese would be a great bench forward for Brisbane for the next 3 years. He would be perfect.
And wouldn't cost as much as some of those other blokes we have do.
Yeah, like, for instance, I know Leeson Armour was offered to the Broncos a couple of years ago before he signed with the Warriors. Like, he'd be perfect as well. You know, he's going to cost you $500K maybe a year, but you know exactly what you're going to get from Leeson Armour week in, week out. It's the exact same thing, and it's good. He's not going to score a lot of tries. He's not going to win your games by himself, but he won't lose your games.
100%, mate. Like, we have a lot of those guys now. As you said, you'd pay $500K, you know what you get from Leeson Armour. We paid $500K for a lot of guys. We didn't know what we were going to get. We took a gamble on a lot of them, and I'm with you there that, you know, if you sit down now, if I look at our roster and I go, we've got Haas, Lodge, Flegler, Joe O, Carrigan. There's only so many middles those middles can play. Can I lose one of those to try and keep Fafita? Like, 100 times out of 100, I could happily let one of those players go that's not named Payne Haas just to keep Fafita.
Yeah, and look, one of the things to come out of the Fafita, losing Fafita is talking to Broncos officials the last few days, is that while they're obviously gutted, they wanted to keep Fafita. Mm. There is a silver lining. And I do agree, and they're obviously trying to look at the positives, but there are positives. They can now, with Fafita, what they're offering, about 800, depends. Some say it was more, some say it was less, but we'll just go with 800 a year. That's enough money to get, say, a 600K senior player, or two 400K 25-year-olds to come off the bench, or you combine that with Jack Bird. I mean, they're going to have to pay a lot of Jack Bird's freight. They're going to have to pay 700K of $1 million. But say you get that 300K back, that's 1.1. Say, even though they'll continually deny it, say if Milford found a new club, that, and they would have to pay a lot of Milford's salary, probably 600K. So that's, all of a sudden, you've got $1.5 million. And you can buy two very good senior players around that 25 to 30-year-old age group that you do need more than you need for Fafita right now.
Okay, well, I may as well ask you that now. I was going to jump into Fafita a bit more, but you touched on that. I don't know if you're allowed to share them with me, but you mentioned a few names to me that we might be looking at. Are you able to share those names as replacements?
Well, no, because I think I'm not really, because it's more just speculation. It's more just, okay. Yeah, it's more, one of the things I try not to do is just wildly speculate.
Okay.
But yeah, there are some players out there I think they're looking at, but they'll deny it. But, and they're contracted. That's the thing, though. You look at the off contract list, there's not a lot of off contract players for 2021, right? That really suit Brisbane. I was looking at the other day and I thought Jesse Bromwich was one of them, but I've heard that he's taken up his options. So, like, again, Jesse Bromwich, how good would that be? I don't know how much you'd have to pay for him, but he'd be perfect too. I mean, he's past his best, but he's still very good. The other one was like a Frank Molo, but broke the news tonight. He's agreed to terms.
Just tooting your own horn there, mate. Just broke that news.
Yeah, just myself, mate. Couldn't help it. so yeah, he's re-signed with the Cowboys too. So yeah, that's the issue for me, is that when I talk to Broncos officials and they're like, "Hey, look, this sucks, but let's think about what we can do with this money." And they don't mention names, and I sort of throw names at them. There's not a lot there. There isn't a lot there for 2021. 2022 onwards, absolutely. I mean, I still think, and it's not going to happen, but they should have just thrown the bank. They should have thrown Red Hill at Luke Keary. Well, he'd be perfect for Tom Dearden.
Yeah, it would be. One of my worst nightmares is, and I do feel like this is inevitable, but I feel like Anthony Milford will leave the Broncos and go not back to the player we expected. I think that's gone, but go much back closer to the player we expected him to be than what he is now. And my major fear is that, you know, we swap him for like Jesse Bromwich. We swap the player options next year. He goes down there and he goes to Melbourne and just murders the competition. I don't think I'll sleep if that happens.
Yeah, and he could do it too because he's still a hell of a footballer in there. I don't know what's gone wrong with Milf. I don't know. He's a real enigma. He doesn't really talk to the media. He's not rude to us or anything, but he just doesn't really want to deal with us, which is, that's fair enough. That's fine. That's his personality. So I don't really know what's happened there, but I agree. I think if he went somewhere else, I think it'd be better for him. The Broncos will deny it, but I don't doubt for a second that if they could, they would offload him for next year and they would have to pay a significant freight. And I also think, though, that a club, this is what coaches do, right? Coaches love a project.
They're
like girls in their early 20s. They love a project. They love to work on someone and build them into someone. And that's what I can just imagine, say, Trent Barrett at the Bulldogs looking at Milford. Okay, he's got to pay 400. Some say might say that's overs. But he would look at that and go, if I turn him into anywhere near what he was in 2015 and 2016, I look like a genius.
Yeah, and I don't know enough about Milford's personal life, but I just have that basic assumption of it happens often too. Players move away from their family, they're less comfortable, they spend more time on their football than they do for socialising and similar. I'd have that feeling that if Milford came away from Brisbane again and out of his comfort zone a bit more, he might also apply himself more in his extra time. I don't know if you agree with that.
No, I probably do agree, yeah. Again, like as I said, Milford doesn't really open up to anyone. At all, so in terms of the media, so it's hard to get a read on him. But my money is on Jack Bird and Anthony Milford not being at the Broncos next year.
Yeah, that's Bird I couldn't care less about, and I'm happy to pay freight to lose him. Milford would hurt me, but I think most of the Brisbane fans, outside of myself and about four others, I had enough of him. So but yeah, let's go on to the real news we're here for. Let's talk about the other one that really hurt me this week, the Dave Fifita saga. Now, Dave Fifita's a guy. I planted my flag on Fifita Island when he was like 16, 17. I was on this podcast like 3 years ago, waxing lyrical about him and wondering why the hell are we re-signing Matt Gillett and Alex Glenn when we have this Fifita kid coming. Anyway, we've got to the point now. I didn't believe it even until a week ago that he'd actually go to the Titans. He hadn't gone for that money yet, but here we are. I want to ask you firstly, how the hell did this go for so long, and how did the Broncos get it so wrong in losing Fifita to the Titans?
It went for so long because it's very complicated. So Steve Deakin is not really Dave Fifita's manager, even though he is technically his manager. There's a guy called Michael Hudson who spotted and signed Dave Fifita as like a 15, 16-year-old or something. Michael Hudson recently, about a year ago, quit the company that he was in, the management company that he was in, which is run by Steve Deakin. I have no idea why. Michael Hudson, I've spoken to him, I did speak to him briefly, but he didn't want to borrow me, he didn't want to talk to me. So I don't know what happened there, but basically Fifita has no relationship with Steve Deakin. And like, again, I don't know if there was any drama there or what happened. I don't think there was. I think it's more that Fifita just didn't have a relationship with him. So he didn't really have a manager, and that made things very difficult for him, and his mum as well, Gwen, who's essentially acting as a manager without, you know, she doesn't know, does she? She's not a manager, but under the NRL rules, a family member can act as a manager. So that's really why it took so long, is that it was all very complicated trying to work out, okay, do I sign this? Because there's been all sorts of deals offered, like South offered a five-year mega deal. Do I sign the five-year mega deal and have to pay Steve Deakin, a guy I've had nothing to do with, 6.5% over the next 5 years? Do I, like, all these deals come and go. The Bulldogs had a massive deal. The Bulldogs thought they were a real chance until about 2 weeks ago. Do I sign that? Or then it became, as I reported a while ago, just another plug for me.
Man, you're doing great.
The one-year deal then was the most realistic option. That's sort of what him and Gwen came to, is that let's do a one-year deal. Obviously, clubs don't want to do that. So then it took a while for clubs to reassess, do we want to do it? Do we not want to do it? The Titans were like, absolutely, yes, we will pay you a gazillion dollars even for 1 year. And then the Broncos were like, okay, geez, we're going to have to actually enter into this 1 year thing. So, yeah, it's been complicated. There's the Broncos, in terms of the length of the deal, there's nothing they could have done. There's nothing in terms of letting it drag on. And it did drag on. But I don't see how they couldn't have made it happen any simpler or easier or quicker. Ultimately, the Titans, and I'll tell you this, the Broncos, the entire time they were telling me, because I was always pretty convinced he would stay until about 2 weeks ago. And they were telling me, like, the last 9 months, they're like, look, this could go anywhere. They're saying, I know you're confident, Chris, but this could go anywhere. They were always a little bit cautious because it's a situation none of them had been involved with. And he's a 20-year-old kid. Like, you know, it's going to take him time and who knows what he wants to do. He was backflipping a lot. And ultimately, that money is just too good to ignore. And also, he's getting down there to play with his mates, Tino, Tanner Boyd, Mo. They're all his mates. Like, he's tight as with them, you know. And that was a big draw card. And Mal and Justin Holbrook really sold him. I know for a fact that he's become quite close with Mal. He really respects him. Gordon Tallis got a bit of attention over the weekend, but it's Mal. It's Mal and Justin. Like, Justin really sold him. Mal really sold him. He formed quite a close bond with them over the last 6 weeks. And yes, it's the money, but he does see a real future of playing in the finals with his best mates from school.
Yeah, I did laugh at the Gordon Tallis one, mate. It wasn't the money. It wasn't Mal. Actually, it was that one phone call with Gordon Tallis. Okay.
Yeah. That's just a beat up. That's just a beat up yarn. I mean, Gordy's a good bloke. He wouldn't have wanted to come up like that. But
no,
yeah.
He wouldn't.
I mean, I've got to give credit to Mal because I've got to be honest. I was a bit skeptical. I'm like, Mal, you need a win here, mate. You know, like, he needs a win. And he's got one. He's got a big one. This was the one player they wanted to get. This is the one player the Broncos didn't want to lose. And he thought of the Broncos trying to not, like, working hard enough and not doing enough. They worked really hard. What about them in Bali? People forget that. They used it against the Broncos, but then also forget, like, they got him out of Bali. It was like escape from New York, but escape from Bali. You know,
just lock him back up there, mate, if you want to send him back over.
They sent, like, an emissary over there in Adam Walsh to get him out, you know? So, yeah, they tried really hard, but ultimately the Titans made a very good pitch. And I've got to say, they did really well in not having much information come out from their side either. So, yeah, they played it really well, and credit to them. And I think it's good for rugby league. I know Broncos fans would hurt, but it's just good for league that we're going to have a Titans team that maybe people can start to care about.
Yeah, and I know it is your job to spring those leaks, but the Broncos ship is very leaky this year. I feel everything we do is in the media every week, and that's just not the most conducive environment to effective player negotiations.
No, it's not. You're right, and that's a result of losing. Though people start to talk because people get frustrated and start looking after themselves and not the team because they're worried about their job or et cetera, et cetera. And also, the Broncos have, you know, they have a lot of old boys that. Like, who are the Cowboys' old boys? You know what I mean? Like, yeah, like, who are the Titans' old boys? They've got a lot of old boys that had incredible success, and I work with a couple of them in Gilly and Webby, and they're probably two of the more restrained ones who they take their shots, but they're not like Chris Johnson, guys like that, who are just genuinely frustrated and upset. And you know what? Chris Johns makes a call to the Broncos. He'll find some stuff out. Whoever it is makes a call to the Broncos, that's an old boy like that, people will whinge and bitch and it'll all come out.
Yeah, that's it. And so I know the money was big, but like, I just truly don't believe the money is the only factor. Like,
no, it's not. It's not the only factor.
It has to, like, yeah, I'm just confirming my own bias here. The losing hasn't helped, right?
No, absolutely not. If this team's flying and everyone's happy, it's sort of like, so Trevor Gilmister, who I work with, is I'd consider him a mate. He's famously doesn't, Wayne Bennett, you know, basically punted Gilly. He just tapped him on the shoulder, just like he did Wayne, Wally Lewis, right? But I dug up this old photo the other day of Gilly with his arm wrapped around. He doesn't dislike Wayne, but they don't get on either. And I dug up this old photo of Gilly with his arm around Wayne. They were hugging and embracing. And I sent it to Gilly and I said, ha, 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 happy times. And he replied, amazing what winning can do. And that's right. Like, winning, you don't think about any of that negative. If they're winning, why is he thinking about leaving? He wouldn't even be thinking about it. But all the losing has absolutely not helped. But you got to give credit to Titans as well. They got Tino. Tino's a big thing, man. Like, Tino, Mo, they're two of his good mates. Like, so that's a big attraction. Justin Holbrook, I don't really know him. I've spoken to him like twice, but I only hear good things. He's unlike Garth Brennan, like, who, when you speak to people about Garth,
God.
You heard a lot of negative things. you speak to player managers, you speak to officials from other clubs, you speak to players. Tevita Pengai today in an interview randomly wrapped the Titans and their coaching staff and how good they're developing down there. You know what I mean?
Oh, God, that's not good. Don't tell me that, Chris.
It's definitely not the money. The money's certainly a part of it, a big part of it. If it was equal footing, I think he would have probably stayed with the Bronx. He's a 20-year-old kid with a big family who's never known. No one in that family is knowing money like this. It's 800K versus 1.1 something a year for 3 years. It's a lot.
Yeah, it is. And then the winning, the influence. I know people always say that, oh, people stay at the Broncos for less, but they don't stay for less. They stay for less money, but they stay for more on the field and the playing for. I know it sounds wanky as a Brisbane fan, but playing for Brisbane usually means something because you play in front of those big crowds and you play on the big games, all that kind of stuff. But we haven't had any of that draw the last year or two. It doesn't help us keep players like this anymore. It just doesn't.
And that's a great point you just made about staying for less when it's actually less money, not less. You know, Brisbane has always made life very comfortable for their players, you know, on and off the field. And I'm not alleging salary cap dramas here, but I just mean in general, they find ways to make life comfortable. And winning and playing in front of big crowds and having a media that wants to see you succeed, and when you are winning, the media's all behind you. For instance, I'm sure us in the media handing the Broncos all the time probably hasn't helped either. Like, it's Dave's looking around going, when we're losing, this sucks, you know, and it would suck. And I feel for the players, like, I don't want to be handing them either. It's just, you got to feed the beast. And at the moment, everyone wants to know every move of the Broncos. It's been incredible. I'll write some tweet about Herbie Farnworth switching center positions to wing and it'll have an enormous response. You know what I mean? Like, it's quite incredible. So yeah. And the other thing is, though, and look, again, I don't think that people will lie and deny it, but credit to Danny Wilder. When Danny Wilder wrote the yarn and, well, tweeted about the backflip, I know Dave Fifita was upset about whoever leaked that info. Mm. Again, credit to Danny. Good scoop, good yarn. But I do know that Dave was upset about that, and that's why for about 2 weeks it went quiet. He was really frustrated that stuff got out because it did make him look like an idiot. So I understand.
It definitely made him look stupid.
Yeah, so I understand why he was upset about that. I don't know who leaked it. I don't know how Danny gets it. I don't know Danny, so I don't have any idea about that. But I do know that that frustrated him, and I think that was the start of the end.
Yeah, interesting you raise that, because, again, that's another fact that it isn't dollars, because he did already turn down the dollars at one point. I think we've forgotten the part where he agreed to backflip, but I guess somebody at Brisbane hasn't waited for the ink to dry or even the pen to hit paper before they started bragging about keeping Fifita at the club. And, you know, that might be something that, I'm not saying it's what made him flip back to the Titans, but at least it's what made him hesitate a little. And that might be the thing that, you know, has us ruining losing Fifita for the next 15 years. One person not shutting their mouth.
Yeah, it was definitely a part of it. And that's the thing, like anything, there's multiple parts. But on Friday, I knew Fifita was gone on Friday. So I did the tweet about the 3-year new deal and Titans in the box seat, but I knew he was gone. But the Titans were very cautious even then. They were like, I'm telling you, he's not done here. I'm like, I'm telling you, he is. And he hadn't formally notified them until he told his teammates on the Saturday morning. So that was when they actually breathed a sigh of relief and said, oh, actually, that's how nervous they were of him backflipping again. Like, that's when they actually said, oh, okay, he's told his teammates it's going to happen. They had a fair indication on Friday it was going to happen, but they were still nervous it wouldn't.
Yeah, is that why the players are vomiting at training, mate? Because I had that feeling.
It was funny. Like, it was funny. Corey Oates actually gave me a bit of stick today at training because he said, oh, well, the team meeting was on and then all of a sudden you're tweeting about it, so who's the leak? But it wasn't actually a player who leaked it. It's just the way it is. As soon as you tell your teammates, they talk to people who talk to people, and suddenly you're here.
That's it, mate. And how was the energy then at Saturday after that? Did you speak to players about Fifita's departure?
Well, yeah, Tevita and Tom Dearden were up for an interview today, and Tevita couldn't help but have a bit of a, he just can't help himself. He just said, look, 1.2 million is a lot of money. Tom, of course, he can't really say much, Tommy. He's just trying to do his best and get away without not doing media, without getting in trouble. But I think the general feeling is they support him. Like I said to you, Tevita was like, look, they're doing something, they're building well down there. They're doing good things. So they support him. They understand. There's no thought of a Justin Hodges happening and them banning Fifita from playing for him. There's no
need to win. That's why.
Yeah, that's the other thing. They need to win. Oh, I think he will play this week. He looked very good. Looked very sharp at training. It was funny. We're watching him training, just going, "Wow, look at this. Look at what they've lost." Like he just.
I don't want him back because of that. That's why I don't want to see him play again.
Yeah, but yeah, there's no thought. They all support and they understand. And I think the club. Well, I guess as a Broncos fan, what do you think about the club? There's been some talk out there that actually they offered close to $1 million for him in the end. I don't think they did. I think it was pretty close to 800K. I think they upped their offer from about 700 to around 800. As a Broncos fan, would you have liked them to match the 1.1 something million a year offer at the Times?
I'm going to be one of the rare people that says we should have got as close to that money as we could have, like over $1 million or not. I can't stomach this people saying, oh, but edge forwards aren't worth this, or edge forwards have never been paid this before, and all that kind of business, because he's unlike any other edge forward of the last 10 years. And he's one of those players, a Dave Fifita, a player like him, a back rower who can be invisible for 75 minutes, then win you a game from your own 30. He's the one player in the competition like that. It's just him. He might be the one rugby player in the world like that, that he can be a forward and do those things. And he's now going to play for another club. And, you know, even though I like thinking I'm a smart footy fan, we don't watch rugby league for the salary cap and roster construction. We watch it for the entertainment on the field. And when we lost James Roberts, that really stung me, because no matter what happened to Jimmy the Jet, he brought me a lot of joy in the field as a Broncos fan. And Dave Fifita does that now. He's a pure entertainment player when he's on that pitch. Anytime he gets the ball, I'm excited. You know, he can run across field like a back row with the ball in two hands and step and goose step, and things can happen. He can crack games open like he did this year against the Cowboys. And we lost him and kept a lot of other young players, but a lot of just good ones, not many great ones, if you ask me.
Yeah, and you make a good point. And that exact point you've made is why the Titans say they paid overs, because they want those intangibles to be the joy of their fans and to attract new fans. They want all the hype. They want the Fifita show. And they're willing to pay that extra 300K a year for the Fifita show, even if on the field his results reflect a 700K a year player. You know what I mean? So, yeah. Look, personally, I think the Broncos did the right thing. I think they could have won more games this year, and that would have helped them stay. I think they could have managed the process perhaps a bit better in the last 3 weeks. But, you know, I know Paul White will still speak to him regularly. I know Paul White's been a big help to him lately, especially because Dave was struggling, like, mentally. He really was with the decision. It was huge for him, and it really was weighing him down, and he was emotional when he told his teammates. But I still think the Broncos did the right thing in limiting their offer. I just think for a player like that, he's not a high work rate player. He might become one, but he isn't. He's not, like, people compare him to Sam Burgess or Sonny Bill, but he doesn't have the hands of Sonny Bill, and he doesn't have the work rate of Sam Burgess, but he's more athletic than both and can break a line better than either. So, I just think that sort of money, again, is your Luke Keary's. It's those sort of guys to me. It's your middle players.
Yeah, if it was different horses at Brisbane now, I'd probably agree with you as well, but because there's so many players, I don't think it's worth the money we're playing them. That's why it's hard for me to swallow. You know, when we've lost, you know, we have lost good players in the past. People are acting like this is the first time we lost good players, but we did have a period there when we lost Inglis, well, we didn't get him, and Hunt, Carmichael Hunt and Israel Folau in the same space of 2 years. And the one that really stung me out of those was Hunt. It wasn't Folau, even though Folau was a great try scorer, because I thought Hunt was everything. And after we lost him and we lost all the others, there was not that much left at that club for mine that would lead the team forward. And now for me, I thought we had two can't-lose players in this bunch of 30. And I thought they were Payne Haas and Dave Fifita, and we've lost one of them. And now I sit here thinking, oh, well, I guess we've still got, you know, Carrigan and Lodge and Flegler and Joe O and, you know, and a couple of decent guys like Herbie and Tessie and whatever. But not any one of those guys gets me anywhere close to as excited as Fifita does. It just doesn't happen for me.
Yeah, no, and I totally agree. But You know, it's funny actually. I think about Folau and all that time. Geez, they rebounded out of that well into 2011 to make the to prelim. Yeah. Like that was pretty amazing. But that all that happened. Remember, that was when Greg Inglis signed and then backflipped as well. All that time,
yeah.
That period. That was a really bad period. I wrote on the weekend that this was their lowest ebb, the Broncos, but that may have been lower, the Ivan Hendjak era.
Yeah, I think this is our lowest ebb just because the results, we're losing like an under-20s team. We're not just losing. When we lose by 30 or 40 points poorly now. It just feels lower because of that, purely the optics of it for me.
Yeah, but, yeah, it probably is. It's certainly in the bottom two, isn't it?
It is.
It just made it, like, the thing is, it just sucks to cover because most of the guys there are really good guys. Pretty much all of them are. And you're just like, oh, man. Really, I've got to bag these guys again. You know what I mean? It's just, and for you fans, it would suck too because you sit down and watch footy, and you knew against Melbourne, even when you started well, we all knew it wasn't going to end well.
Yeah, 100%. It was going to be 40 points. Just mattered when they got to 40.
So frustrating to watch, just the inability to defend multiple sets.
It is, and it does remind me of the Fifita losing Hunt, and I know. Compared to losing, I know Fifita hasn't said anything yet, but Carmichael said, like, when he left, he thought he was a Bronco boy for life, and like, you know, just that wasn't the club he thought he was at anymore. You know, when he had a meeting with Hendjak and walked out and withdrew their offer and he left, like, I had that feeling with Fifita because that kind of, you know, a year ago, 6 months ago, him and his mum were both saying he'll never leave the Broncos.
Yeah, they
and
did.
Here it is.
They did even 2 weeks ago. They said, you know, that I think it was like 2 or 3 weeks ago. It was still the same. Like, no, we're not leaving. So, yeah. I mean, I think there's more to tell, and I don't think Dave will tell it anytime soon. But I think there's some things that I don't know about that have probably happened in the background that probably even the Broncos don't know about. you know, that have happened. Like, I do think Dave's the sort of guy that would tell, that would say to the Broncos, "I want to stay." And then go to the Times and say, "Oh, geez, I'm thinking about coming." You know what I mean? Like, I think he's
willing to
please everyone. You know, he's probably, so that's maybe where some of that has come out, that he wouldn't have wanted to hurt anyone at all.
Yeah. So. Okay. And do you believe that it might be a combination of all things, but do you believe that Fifita's departure from Brisbane is a fork in the road for not just Anthony Seibold, but also for some of those higher up guys like a Peter Nolan, like a Darren Lockyer, like a Paul White, in terms of it might define the conclusion of a tenure at the club?
Well, Paul White's definitely going at the end of the year. Seibold just needs to win. You know, the 5-game thing was a bit, that's not quite right. There's some truth in there, in that they've made it clear to Seibold, you've got to turn it around. Otherwise, you know, we're going to have a really good look at this and see what to do next. And they basically said that when the last week when they announced the performance review. Pete Nolan, I'm not quite sure about. Obviously, I get on well with Pete. I consider him a mate. I get on well with him. Obviously, there's this list. Like, we all know it's not what it should be. As I said, the lack of 25 to 30-year-olds. But I've got to say, until this year, I thought they'd done pretty well. It's interesting, isn't it? Like, I've got to admit, I thought it was a good list until I've realised that it isn't. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean, mate. It's just the distribution of funds is just wrong. It's imbalanced.
Yeah, and last year, there was a bit of talk. Joel Gould from NRL.com was the first to really actually write about the lack of 25 to 30-year-olds. And he also was the first to write about the too much investment in the forwards. But the thing is, mate, there's $2.6 million tied up in Anthony Milford, Jack Byrne, and Darius Boyd.
Yeah, that's the imbalance problem, mate, that only one of those is a key position player who's on the field regularly.
Yeah, and Jack Byrne's been a disaster through all sorts of reasons, namely just bad luck. But he did come to the club injured too, so there's a bit of, depends on who you talk to about that, like, he came to the club with an injury that no one realised was as bad as it was. I don't think Jack even realised the sternum problem he had is debilitating. When they signed him, because they were looking hard at Mitch Moses, like, they were very close to going all out for Mitch Moses on a 850-900K a year deal. That was the other option. Whether Mitch signed that and came here, I don't know. But that was the sort of talk. It was, do we go for Mitch or do we go for Jack? And they went for Jack and got him. And I thought at the time that Jack Byrd playing lock forward for the Broncos would be fantastic. It just hasn't worked out.
at all. And we have a million other forwards now. So Bird's not even close to being in the pack.
No, well, it was that preseason. So he came up here, and that preseason, when they realised just how bad the sternum injury was, they quickly realised there's no way he's ever defending in the middle.
Yeah.
So that's unfortunate, because it wasn't like they signed him like, you're definitely our lock. They signed him thinking he could be our lock, or maybe he lights a fire under a MILF or something like that and moves to 5'8". Maybe he's a fullback. If we can, you know, he was a bloody good footballer. People forget he was an excellent footballer.
Yeah, he's only playing 17 games for us, so that's why they forget. It's been, what, since 2017, 17 football games, and all different kinds of injuries doesn't help. But
no, and you know, I think... a true footballer, like a real throwback. He does remind me a lot of Victor Radley. I thought he could have become a Victor Radley type lock if he didn't have those injuries. And a great character to have around too. Just full of life, and he's that sort of guy that they've needed. It's been one of the things as well with Isaac Luke coming, a guy who's full of life and upbeat. They didn't have a lot of those sort of guys, so you need them.
I love Isaac Luke, by the way. Just a bit too late. I love his energy, and it would have been good if we were winning, because he is quite a guy who carries a lot of swagger on the field when his team's on top.
He's been all right. Not getting any of that. I think he's been pretty good.
So do I. And as for Bird, as you said, talented footballer, but I couldn't care less if I ever saw him again in a Broncos jersey. You know, good luck to him.
I think he wants to go back down to Sydney. And the Bronx will make it work, but geez, they're going to have to pay a lot of that wage next year. That's one of the other things, mate, is the player options. You know, again, I really like Pete Nolan. I think he's done a really good job ultimately, except I've realised the past 6 months that there's been some bad decisions made, and it doesn't all come back down to him. Just like people say, including myself, about Wayne, like Wayne made some bad decisions, but they're not just Wayne's. You know, there is a recruitment retention committee there, so it's multiple people's fault, but ultimately, this list isn't what it should be. That's the thing. And if they continue losing like this, there's going to be people lose their jobs. It's that simple.
Well, that's it, mate. The player options is something we've spoken about in this podcast before. How, like, I understand they're not a bad chip to have for some players. Say you're recruiting a big name or similar, and the only way they'll come is some options. I get that, but it's not great. You look down a list and like seven players have player options. You know, and even guys, no offense to Jake Turpin, you know, a good try on the field and a pretty decent young hooker, but he's not the quality of player I'd be giving a player option to myself if I ran a football club, for example.
Yeah. And look, I've addressed this with multiple Bronco officials, and they say it's hard to do deals now without them. That's the reality. Team options just don't exist. You just don't see them anymore at all, any club. So, and the other thing is that without the ratchet clauses that you used to, like now it's very hard to get a ratchet clause cleared with the NRL. So that was one thing they used to use. So now the managers use player options as their sort of wriggle room. But yeah, there's way too many. There's way too many at the club. There has been. Jack Bird shouldn't have had a player option. Milford shouldn't have had a player. But having said that, you know, Melbourne did well with Milf. They just drove up his price. I'm not sure if they ever seriously wanted him, but geez, they did well to drive up his price.
They did. And I think when you have player options on guys on those wages as well, it's really hard to effectively plan your roster construction as well, right?
Yeah, that's it. It's tough. And like I say, I genuinely thought until I'd say about, what was it, first week of September when they got busted by Parramatta last year? I thought the list was building nicely. I think people have dug out old tweets where I've said this is the best young forward pack in the comp. I really thought it was. They were keeping everyone.
I agreed.
You know?
The pack was doing quite well in a lot of those games. And I agreed with you on that. But I had issues of the distribution of funds. Like, you know, there was guys in the back line not exactly earning their cash. And then you have guys like Jordan Carr who coming back with that poor negotiation. The McCulloch deal that might still come back next year, who knows? And then going and signing, you know, Brody Croft, and everyone knows what I think about Brody Croft. Just that's when I started was just really losing some faith in the direction of where we're going to go the next year or two. Like it's all well and good having an amazing young forward pack, but you know what's surrounding it was my issue.
Yeah, and that's fair too. That's legitimate, fair issues. There's a lot of problems at the club. But I still don't think that this team, the way it's constructed, should ever be losing like this. You know.
Yeah. Well, you did mention earlier, and you've been around that club. You do know, or you have the ability that a lot of fans own it. You get to see them at training and after training as well. You get to see how the guys interact. Then there's a genuine lack of leadership. Like we all see it on the field, but you do believe there's lack of leadership in that playing group. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I sort of alluded to it already a couple of times. There's a lot of sort of introverted, shy characters, I think. There's just a lack of leadership. And, I mean, Seabold's alluded to it himself. He said they went on this Tasmanian wilderness trip up one of those mountains, which I forget what it's called. What's the big one in Tassie that you go up? Anyway, it was like an overnight hike with a leadership group. And they've done some other things, getting Lockyer in to talk to the leadership group because they recognise there aren't genuine leaders here. Matt Lodge is the real leader. He can't be captain for obvious reasons. Mm. He never will be. I do think that Seabold wanted him to be captain, but it was never going to get approved. The team would like him to be captain. I think his teammates would like him to be captain. We all saw, remember early this year after, I think it was the Roosters loss or one of them, where Lodge fronted the press and he just tore his own team apart. That's why Lodge is the realistic captain if he could be, but he isn't. And Alex Len is also a great leader. He's a great captain, a great leader, but he's not a bark-in-your-face sort of leader that they need. Like, it sort of was pointed out, I think it might have been Kenty who pointed out the difference, or Ben Eichen, about Jake Trbojevic in the Manly Sheds a couple of weeks ago. They don't have those sort of characters to get in players' faces and GM up and rev them up. You see it in under the goal line, like under the goalpost after tries.
We have none of those players, not one on the field.
I think, and you know, when Darius was captain, he wasn't that type either. But yeah, so there is a lack of leadership. There are a lot of shy players. Payne Haas is a shy sort of character. You know, he's not a big voice sort of guy. He just wants to get through his work. So that is an issue too. And Brodie Croft was brought up here, not necessarily to be a big leader, but he was brought up here for his talk. Which he can do, but it's hard when you're losing too. All that stuff drops away, doesn't it? Like, same with Tessie Newey. I hear him at training and he's barking orders, he's yelling and screaming at players, and then that doesn't really come across in the game. So yeah, it's tough. And let's not forget that there's a horrific injury toll. Again, there's no way this team should be losing anything like this, but considering their injury toll, I don't think they were ever going to make the eight. But they probably should be finishing around that 9, 10, 11 spot, whereas they're going to be around that 14, 15, 16.
Yeah, what you mentioned there as well with the guys when they're losing and not barking orders, that's a bit of the inexperienced stuff. And it's why I think, as you said, Paddy Carrigan, having heard him speak off the field, a very well-spoken man and does sound like a natural leader. And I do feel that he's potentially a long-term captain for the club, or, you know, at least a vice-captain or similar. But when you're still finding your feet in first grade, and you're still struggling with the results and finding your feet as a footballer, it goes away. All of it goes away. Like Brodie Croft and Tessie, those guys, you can't expect them to step up when they've played only a handful of years for Croft or a handful of games for Tessie, step up behind the post and bark orders when they have no idea what the hell's happening in front of them.
Yeah, absolutely right. Like, what are they meant to say? They haven't been in this spot before. And you know, I hear Paddy Garrigan is one of the good talkers at training. I've heard him call teammates, you know, swear words, etc. So he will get on his on rival players' cases. But how old's he? 22? You know?
Yeah.
Like, it shouldn't happen. He shouldn't have to.
100%. They shouldn't be expediting leadership. It comes naturally.
Remember when one of the great stories of that Roosters grand final when Cooper Cronk was busted was that that week they were in the team meeting and Trent Robinson basically told them, guys, Cooper Cronk's unlikely to play. Luke Keary stood up and just said, I don't give a effing whatever. I will do it without him. We will do it without him. I'm going to make sure that his absence doesn't impact us at all. Get behind me. Like, who at the Broncos would ever deliver someone like that?
Not one of them, mate. Not even close to one of them.
Yeah. And that's the difference, and that will come with age. Luke Keary has had a face-to-face stash with Russell Crowe on a bonding camp. You know, like, he's been through a lot. He's won premierships before. He's been through it all.
He has, and he's going to re-sign, apparently, at the Chooks, so he ain't going to be that one replacing salary Mr. Papita.
I want him to be the inaugural captain of the Western Corridor NRL team, mate, but that's not going to happen either, so.
So do I, but, yeah, I don't know how likely that bid is. That'll change in the future, but... Yeah, he's re-signing past that anyway. I'll let you go in a moment. I want to give you one last question before I let you go, Chris, and thanks for coming on again. But just want to talk quickly about the rumours of Ben Eichen as a CEO. Do you firstly place any credence on those and also any thoughts on his potential appointment?
Yeah, I think he's I'd have him about $1.60 favourite-ish. Yeah, if I was framing a market, he's the heavy favourite. They need more of a football, more of a football now sort of guy than a business guy. Paul White's done sensationally well with that business side of it. You can argue that he has it with the football side, but he has with the business. So coming in to replace him, you need someone that can help with the football side, and that's Ben Eichen. There's a recruitment firm doing a thorough search process. They might turn up someone totally different and recommend them. But yeah, I think Ben Eichen, if he genuinely wants it, which I believe he does, and I haven't spoken to him about it, I think it's his to lose.
Okay. Yeah, I think the same as well, mate. I think it's time for some football now. And Eichen has also had the balls to call out a lot of the things we've spoken about on this podcast as issues at the Broncos this year, which, you know, puts a bit of faith in that. If he's already said those things now, they know what his thoughts are of that place. So if he's coming in, they're ready for what he wants to change.
So what do you think? What would change is if you were CEO tomorrow, what would you do?
Mate, the first thing I'd do is stop signing so many players that go from one player agent, let alone Isaac Moses. Like,
they're doing
you can't
that.
Have
they're
one
dwindling that down.
Yeah, you can't have one agent, no matter who it is, controlling so much of your playing group, because if you upset him on one side, he could threaten to pull players out on the other side, you know? But the first thing I'd be doing is replacing the head coach after that. I can't do anything about people above me, so head coach replacement. Unfortunately, I don't love the head coach market right now. I think the good candidates went last year. I wanted Adam O'Brien, but he's got his job. But head coach would be the first thing you'd want to do. And you want a head coach that has similar beliefs as you do, so you can, you know, mark your tender as a CEO, so tenure as a CEO with that head coach. And then, yeah, I need a leader or two, maybe three. they're not great. As you said, Keir is a great example on the market. Again, the market is very dry, but we need a leader in the halves. But the other player I'd really be chasing, I'd be throwing everything I have at him left over, is I'm going after Harry Grant. I don't care what the Storm say. I'm getting in his ear. I want Harry Grant. I'm not missing out on... We've missed Cam Smith for 15 years. I'm not missing out on the next Queensland hooker for the next 10 years. I want Harry Grant at Brisbane, and he's going to be the other guy to steer us around.
Yeah, and I think if Cam goes around again, I don't think he goes to the Storm. I know Harry's come out and said he's going to the Storm regardless, but I don't think that happens. So I agree. Harry Grant is great. How good was he the other night, even in a losing team? He's got to be the starting Queensland hooker, by the way. Unfortunately for Jake Friend, it just doesn't work out.
He's got to be. Grant's better than him already.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, I think Jake Friend of a couple of years ago would have been, but no, it's got to be Harry, and I'd have probably Ben Hunt on the bench. But yeah. No, I agree with a lot of what you say. I mean, I still have a lot of faith in Seibold. I mean, I still think he's a good coach in there. I really do. And I just think you look at Brad Arthur and Parramatta as a good example. As I said, I think he's got to start winning or at least performing really well if he's going to keep his job at the season's end. And they are going to wait till the season's end. But I still think there's a good coach there. He was Dally M Coach of the Year before he came up here. He did really well with that South. It's just a wrong mix. He needed a more experienced side up here. It's sort of like the opposite of the problem Paul Green had. Well, actually, it's the exact same problem Paul Green had, I should say, is that he also had a young team the last couple of years, and he's much better with senior players. I think if they keep losing, there's going to be mass change. It's that simple. If Ben Eichen comes up here, he's going to make changes. Every CEO does. It's like when a club gets a new CEO or gets a new chairman. You know there's going to be a big change. Everyone wants to stamp their mark. Everyone wants to leave a footprint immediately and shape the club in their way. So whoever replaces Paul White, well, look what Paul White did. He came in and sacked Henjak straight away. So, there's going to be massive change unless they can turn it around. And I still think when they get some players back, they can string some wins together. But, geez, it's been a frustrating season. It's been terrible, really. It's been awful. Like, I can't wait for Origin so I can just move on to something else.
Yeah, Queensland Rugby League in general not had a great year. And the best news for one of the clubs is the worst news for another one of them. So that hasn't helped either.
Yeah, and I do feel really good for those guys down the Titans. Like, I get on well with Dennis Watt, who was at the Broncos. Blokes like that who are just through and through rugby league people. And Justin Holbrook, like I say, he seems like a ripper fella. Just really happy for him and that they've got someone now they can build a side around. I don't know if they're top eight next year, even with Fifita, though. They'll be on the fringe, I think.
I don't think so either. Once you look through their entire squad, there's still some turn to put through that squad. Churn some of those guys over. Like, you know, they still don't know who their hooker is. They're still missing another edge back rower. Oh, well, Kevin Proctor's still there, I guess. But the rest of the back line isn't crash hot. They do have a better young pack than us now. That happened quickly.
Yeah. The hooker's the big one. Like, they do need a good hooker. I think Aaron Clark can be a really good number 14. He's a good solid player. I think Fogarty's a good halfback to build in the future. Kelly's good in the back line. I'm pretty sure Proctor's off at the end of this year. I'm not sure what they're doing with him, but I would suggest that they would want to keep him if they can cut his salary down. Cartwright, he's going to try and stay in Sydney. He's got personal stuff down there, so he wants to stay down there. So they will have some cash spare, but it'll be like Shannon Boyd with Cartwright. There'll be like a payout. I'm not sure how much of that would count towards the salary cap, but I'd say they'll be somewhere around sort of like what the Tigers are this year. Have some great wins where everyone goes, wow, this team could be something, and then the next week they lose.
Yeah, I agree with that. But at least, they're having that pack and they're all locked down for quite some time will help them attract some future talent and maybe some playmakers as well.
Yeah.
Don't know what they're planning with Ash Taylor.
Well, he's there next year. And again, I hope for Ash's sake that he gets to play behind that pack, that he does stick around. And he's shown some glimpses this year. He's still nothing. He's another guy. Geez, it can turn quickly. A couple of years ago, he was set to play State of Origin. He was killing. He was leading all the try assist stuff. He was brainy. Mm. He was like unbelievably ahead, even though the Titans were losing. He was just absolutely killing it the first half. I think it was 2018, the first half of 2018. And then he didn't get picked for Origin. He was going to get picked for Origin.
It killed his year.
Yeah, and he just went into a shell. And he was a completely different player. He's sort of recovered a little bit, maybe 20% of that player. But, yeah, I hope for his sake he gets to play behind that pack. And I really think next year the Bronx, they're going to have some money to play with. I still believe they'll probably have about $1.5 million in their cap with Bird, Milford going, if they can find homes for them. And if they want to leave. I think Bird wants to leave. I'm not sure about Milford. Mm. But I still think if someone came to the Bronx with an offer for Milford, they'd accept it. So they'll have some money to play with. Blake Green, is he the answer? There's a fair bit of rumour out there about him. I don't know.
Blake Green was the answer for me like 3 years ago. It feels like the wrong time for Blake Green now, but I guess if that's what you can get, they're looking for a leader in the halves.
I mean, Tom Dearden and Blake Green together, that's a pretty good partnership, isn't it? It makes a lot of sense. But, the other thing with Croft is, I sort of understood the logic behind having him here this year. I did not understand the logic of telling him straight up, you're in the leadership group and you're our halfback. I thought him and Dearden should have had to fight it out over the preseason. Like the Tigers have done. And this is the one thing, the thing with Seibold is I think he'd probably even acknowledge it himself. He probably should have been a bit harsher on some of the players early on, like Mark McGuire has. You got to make them fight more for their spot, not just have it.
Yeah, and I think that we mentioned that before, you did before this podcast. It reminds me of that Tigers team early when a lot of the players were given opportunity before they earned it and just given things to them. And they did this with this Broncos lot. Like, we pushed out some senior players, gave guys leadership positions. Brody Croft was given leadership honours before even hitting the field for us. And it's like, when it doesn't work out, there's not really anything else you can do now, mate.
You're
stuck with Brody Croft as a vice-captain. You can't really drop him that easily.
No, you can't. And, it's sort of like I was talking to someone about this the other day and they were sort of making the point, no, you never needed Croft because you had Pakes who can play half too. Well, he is a half. But I still think that Tom Dearden needed a senior half, especially someone like Croft. But it just hasn't worked out for poor old Brody. I'm not quite sure how he's going to get it back either. I think hopefully next year he can, because he's just a mile away from confidence. He is so down on confidence, as are a lot of players. It's sort of I've actually taken some really. I actually really like what Darius has done the last week. I haven't really thought Darius has deserved his place in the team, but he's having a dig. He's having a go.
Oh God, let's not do Darius chat.
Last week he had a go. I mean, I thought he should have been dropped after the Warriors game. I reported that there were going to be mass changes. I thought there were going to be big changes after that Warriors loss for the Bulldogs. Something changed. I don't know what, but something changed, and they weren't. But I still think they should have. I would have dropped Darius and Milford for that game. But I will say that since then, I think he's actually gone okay.
That's okay. Anyway, I think no better to wrap it up on than Darius Boyd raps. That's me done.
No worries, mate. Great to chat.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, Chris. Appreciate that. I'm sure our fans will love it too. Thanks again.
All good, mate. Cheers. Hey! Hey! We're the Broncos.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.